Welcome to the Playbook. I'm David Meltzer here live at SoFi Stadium, the greatest stadium ever built. It's amazing what $5.5 billion will buy you. And I have an extraordinary guest with me, the incredible Shea Cotton, professional basketball player, philanthropist, and also entrepreneur, a local superstar. Welcome to the Playbook.
Thanks for having me, David.
Thank you. You know, we'll get started right with the idea of Man-Child. It's a documentary. To me, that has a message to everyone: there's no sure thing in life.
Absolutely.
Right? I tell people all the time, this is your life story, not a today story, a week story, or a month story. And especially with young people, and you really, as an advocate for mental health, an advocate for our youth, are able to transcend your story to help enlighten people to have the right values. And the right perspective when things may not work out like you think they're supposed to, but maybe in the end, you end up somewhere even better. And I love that about your story. Give me an idea about Man-Child and the premise for you of wanting to create this documentary. Star-studded, by the way, my boy BD's in there, Baron Davis, Steven Jackson, a lot of my good friends. But what's the actual premise of Man-Child?
The actual premise of Man-Child is basically the moniker that was created from the writers, the journalists. They said I was a man amongst boys growing up.
Like a Steven Jackson?
Yeah, 100%. You know, that was doing things, I guess, before my time. And the whole point of the documentary was to enlighten and inspire people and show them it's not where you start, it's where you end. And even though I had some hardships along the way that were unforeseen, I was blessed to be able to land on my feet after a lot of challenges that I've dealt with, whether it be suicide and depression and things like that along the way, which a lot of athletes deal with in the post-career.
Yeah, it's interesting. Remember when they used to put your senior quote in your yearbook? I went back and to recall what my senior quote was, and it was, it doesn't matter if you have the lead as long as you have the heart to come from behind.
That's right. I like that.
Right? And I thought of you today as I looked at that. I'm like, here's a guy that had so much heart. Now, it's one thing to have the lead and then not have the lead and then have the heart to come from behind.
Absolutely.
You kind of were served an over-exaggerated perspective of how great you were. You know, I have a saying, you're never as good as they say you are and you're never as bad as they say you are.
Right.
And I remind myself you're either humble or you're about to be. But at a young age, I was a victim to it. I'm sure you were as well. Of believing your own bullshit. What were some of the things that you wish you would have had a mentor tell you when everybody was feeding you how great you were and that may have impacted your preparation or your perspective?
It's a great question. I think I wish I had somebody like me ultimately, you know, that was lying in the gap for the good, bad, and indifferent and just keeping you on the right track. Don't go left, don't go right, just keep going forward no matter what adversities we face. As long as you just keep putting one foot before the other, things usually work themselves out. The people that quit, you never achieve the goal because you never get a chance to see it come to fruition. So, you know, for me, in its entirety, it's more about the mental. We deal with a lot of that today with perseverance and getting rid of that sense of self-entitlement and focusing on proving yourself before you know, are rewarded.
Yeah, and how much does faith intertwine with that? For me, you know, when I lost everything, I had to make a choice to believe in something bigger than me, that although the evidence in the days where I lost my mom's house and over $100 million, there's no evidence I would ever have financial success again, maybe survive my marriage, and then even questioning surviving.
Absolutely. It's everything. I mean, my faith is what's sustained me. You know, a close family knit. My father passed 10 years back when the film was pretty much released. So that was a tough piece for him not to be present to see it, the finished product. But my mother's been like my warrior, you know, in my hip pocket. And people have came and went along the way. Everybody's there when things are going well. But then when the house is on fire, everybody's running out. And who's staying in there and making sure everybody's out? So, you know, I'm the guy that's going to stay behind. I'm not leaving nobody in the foxhole. And there's something to that. It's a small percentage of people in the population. But the ones that can stick to things and see it all the way through usually come out on top in the end.
Yeah, it's a life story. It takes things happen very slowly, then all of a sudden. I'm always curious because I am one of those people, for whatever reason, you know, maybe just genetics or energetics, that as bad as shit got, I never thought about taking my own life. But I understand it. I work with a lot of people who have tried who have thought about it,
yeah.
who think about it even still today. And it's one of those things when you're a coach, a mentor, a teacher, you can't just say, hey, Shay, man, just look at the glass half full, brother. It's all about just be positive and grateful.
Right.
You know, that's sometimes maybe some of the worst things you could tell someone that isn't ready to hear it.
Absolutely.
And so I'm always curious, whether it's Mike Moosberger, one of the best downloaded podcasts that I have, even though you never heard of him, an incredible story about suicide in his own attempt to take his own life. For you, after being someone who thought about it, right, and seriously, you know, was right there.
Right.
When you meet kids that are depressed, that have, you know, mental problems, or anybody that may actually come to you and say, hey, man, I don't want to live anymore. Where do you meet them? How do you meet them? Because I'm sure you don't tell them, look at the glass half full.
No, no. That's, you know, you have to meet them where they are, and you have to have empathy and compassion. You got to lead with that, or you'll lose them, you know. And for me, I just try to put myself in their shoes and remember those darks and the low points in my own life at that time. I mean, it was real. I had a real 357 Magnum with fully loaded with bullets, and it was up to my head, and I had a chance, you know, to either squeeze a trigger or put it back down. And my life flashed in front of me, and I thought about everything that I hurt on leaving them behind, pretty much, as, it, you know, I pass on. So I meet kids today that's depressed, and I ask them, where does it hurt? And open with that, and then you'd be surprised the response that you'll get, because a lot of kids have never heard it in that context.
Yeah.
And then we just try to pull those layers back on where the pain is coming from and deal with those issues at the epicenter, you know, one step at a time. And we've had great success. I mean, my nonprofit Academy of Ideas is a vendor for LA Unified in Long Beach in its entirety, which is probably upward 850 schools. So, and it's growing, we're scaling it as we speak. And the place where I see the biggest impact is dealing with the mind.
Yeah.
There's a lot of kids today that are lost. Social media is driving them. And there's a lot of distractions and peer pressures that we didn't have because of the instantaneous information with the phone. So we tend to put the phones up and get to the work. And I call it the heavy lifting. And we've seen a lot of success.
Yeah, there's an energy gap I found as I work with kids that I try to figure out between this understanding, and I went through this, of understanding who I am compared to what I want people to think I am, or what I think other people think I am.
Right.
And there's this huge energy gap between I am and what I want people to think I am, or what I think other people think I am. And it's especially prevalent in everyone, but the kids have it really bad. So when you ask them, where does it hurt, which I love that question, you know, is there a common theme of where it hurts?
Yeah, I think a lot of it's coming from home. You know, the lack thereof, whether it be one, the parents not in the household, the parents working, not having enough time to delegate to them, away from school, just spending time with them. You know, if it's just having dinner together, something simple. So what I've found is our program helps them cope with certain issues where they can actually look forward to coming to school and apply themselves. Because if you're coming to school with these traumas, it's kind of hard to concentrate on your books and excel at a high level.
For sure. It's interesting. My siblings and I, when we all graduated and started, you know, creating income, we took my mom back to school. She got a PhD in education from Columbia.
Nice.
And so I asked her when she came back, I said, Mom, what's your number one takeaway? Which we do here in our masterminds, right? What's your number one takeaway? And she said, the number one takeaway I had was the common denominator of all kids who attend the Ivy Leagues. And I said, that's simple, money. The richest kids go there. She said, nope. I said, oh, must be reading. The kids who read the most must go to Harvard, Penn, Columbia, you know. Nope. She said, the number one common denominator of all the kids, all of them, the scholarship kids, the kids who are legacy, was that they had dinner with their family. And I thought it was really interesting that you use that as where it hurts, that we've lost. It was something that was regained even in my own family during COVID.
Yeah.
I had all my kids come home from college. All my niece moved in with us because she was by herself. And every night we had dinner like it was the 50s, man.
Right.
And people ask me, I know people lost their lives in COVID. But the thing I miss most about COVID was I had family dinners every single night. And I make more money than I ever dreamed of. I can do what I want, when I want, with who I want, for as long as I want.
Right.
But I can't have dinner with my family every night.
Yeah.
can't buy that, right? That's priceless. I mean, how do you monetize that? And I think people ask me, what's the difference between Europe and the States? You know, they take their time at meals. Yeah. They're not in a rush. I mean, you know,
they're not in a rush to serve you, I promise you.
Yeah. That can get a little
bit faster. You live in New York and then you go to Greece,
right?
You're like, and then you get back to New York, you're like, dude, slow down.
Yeah, yeah.
You're yelling at me. I'm trying to decide what to order. I just had to wait 45 minutes for a water.
Right. Trying to keep a balance.
Exactly.
You know, like in Spain, they have siestas. So
they're
taking naps after lunch. I mean, there's something to take from that with the American way we do things and then just kind of merge it. So, you know, for me, family is everything. I mean, my daughter's graduating high school, and I'm just glad that she's driven. Thank you. And, you know, promising in her own right as a flag football standout athlete nationally.
Yeah, talk to Mike out here. His daughter is a superstar.
Nice.
Flag football player.
Nice.
I'm scared of her, but yeah.
Yeah, she's got some company. So she's top 10 in Max Preps wide receiver.
Yeah.
You know, she's got offers and stuff, and she's 4x100 relay. So I'm just glad that she found her lane on her own. You know, I didn't tell her, you have to do this, you have to do that. Make a decision, commit to it, then I'll support it. And that was the agreement.
I love it. So I have two things with kids, and I use it with my own children. For my mom, who she passed a year ago.
Sorry.
Thank you, but blessed to have her. So every day I still text her what I told her for 18 straight years. I tell her, I'm happy, I'm healthy, I love you and appreciate you. Every day.
That's big. That's big. Yeah.
Because that's, as a parent, all I want to know about my kids. So for me, I think there's a methodology of consistency, whether it's dinners or whatever.
Right.
And so every day I tell my kids that I love them, I'm proud of them, and I have their back. I think the first two are obvious to a lot of parents. Of course you're going to tell your kids you love them every day.
Right.
But not a lot of parents do.
Right, right.
Of course you're going to tell your kids you're proud of them. But not a lot of parents do. But for me, my mom always had my back. My dad didn't.
Yeah.
I think a lot of my success, especially when I was young, came from a confidence that if I fuck this all up, excuse my language, my mom got my back.
That's right. Yeah, that's right.
Right. And I think that a lot of kids don't feel as if anyone has their back.
Right.
Do you see that when you're working with the kids?
That's huge. I think that's the biggest issue. You know, to answer the question previously, I think it's being a mentor, lying in that gap, gives them confidence and self-assurance so they can push forward and embark on their dreams and goals. You know, you got to take the leap. I mean, scared money doesn't make money. So if you're not aggressive and self-assertive, you're going to have what you've always had.
So smart. Another thing is what questions we ask our kids. Do you have certain questions that you ask the kids when they're trying to find? I'm sure you get, you know, Shay, man, I don't have a purpose. You know, I'm looking for my purpose. Can you help me find my why?
Right, right.
You know, I hear that a lot. Are there questions or suggestions you give to kids when they're looking for a purpose or they're looking for their why?
Absolutely. I always ask them, you know, discover what your talents and your gifts are. We all have them.
Take inventory.
Yeah, it's a matter of identifying what that is, and let's peel that back and see what's really there. Don't do things just for a financial gain, because you're going to be unhappy. You'll be miserable at the end of the day.
Buying shit you don't need for people you don't like is not a good, trust me, I used to do that.
Right. You find your passion. You know, if you work in your passion, you don't work a day in your life, and you're usually going to far exceed expectation because you're going to do extra.
Yeah, it's interesting. There's a distinction in what you just said. If you work towards your passion, you won't work a day. It's different than what people say, which I don't agree with. If you do what you love, you'll never work a day in your life. Bullshit.
Right.
Yeah. Bullshit. You play basketball. You love basketball?
Yeah, love it.
You didn't love everything about playing basketball.
No.
I played football. I love football still today. It became a big part of me. Yeah. But, dude, sitting on the bench in college, getting tape, watching film, getting my ass kicked.
Right.
Like, I did not like or love that at all.
Right.
And look, I'm married, and I'll speak for my wife because the other way is not going to work on film. But my wife loves me, but I promise she does not like or love everything about me.
That's right. That's fair. Yeah.
So she had to learn to like or love what she doesn't like or love.
Absolutely.
Right? In that, but so to say, like, we pursue our passion is different than saying, oh, if you love what you do, you'll never work a day in your life. Bullshit.
Right.
Marriage is hard.
Big
and
time.
I have a great marriage, and I love my wife, and I know she loves me, but she had to learn to like or love what she doesn't like.
That's
or
right.
Love about.
My father would always say, it's, you know, it's what you can tolerate. So when the two people coming together as one, as long as you're pulling for each other, when one's getting weak, the other one's strong, pulling you back in, it'll work. It'll work.
So there's three things too as we kind of finish up. The idea of doing your best, that's a big deal to me. Like I just say, things happen very slowly, then all of a sudden. So if you're constantly doing your best, I believe it doesn't matter what you're doing.
That's right.
Right. If you, but you got to do your best at it because eventually something's going to hit.
Absolutely.
If you're always doing your best. So do you feel when you're working with kids that they have that instilled in them today? You talked about being entitled, mm-hmm. right? Kids who are entitled aren't doing their best.
Right.
Right. I ask my kids, I don't give a shit what they do. They can play flag football, golf, football, basketball. I don't care.
Right.
But they, when they come home, my first question I ask, did you do your best? It's Spanish test. Mm-hmm. Dad, I got a B+. Did you do your best? Like, did you, what would you do again to get the A? And if he tells me, Dad, I did my best, and I studied as much as I wanted to study, I'm good with it.
Right, right.
Do kids do their best?
I think that's a tough question, you know, because a lot of it starts in the house again.
Mm-hmm.
What does your role models look like, your mother and your father? What does their pedigree look like? How, you know, what do they do for work? How do they approach their work?
Have you ever heard there's no lazy parents? I mean, there's no lazy kids, there's only lazy parents.
I have.
I believe that.
Yeah. It's an offspring, right? It's a byproduct of what you see in the home. You spend more time at home than you do in school. So for me, I saw my father get up at 5:30 in the morning every day, never complain, home at 7. He busted his butt, provided for his family. Him and my mother had a successful business together. And I learned the intangibles of work ethic and being accountable with integrity. I think that takes you a long ways in life, regardless of sport. And anything you do, if you bring that to the forefront, it's going to shine.
That's so important. I always tell people, because my mom raised 6 kids on her own, all of them extremely successful. And they say, well, what advice did your mom give you? I said, it wouldn't matter because none of us listened to it.
Right.
I said, but we watched her.
Yeah.
I watched her work 2 jobs, pack my dinner and paper bag, drive me around, filled up turnstiles, give me greeting cards at convenience stores.
Mm-hmm.
She gave me advice. I didn't listen, but I watched her. And I think a lot of kids are missing the right things to watch.
Right. Well, that's where the mentors come in now. They don't realize that they need us until they realize they need us. So it's important. You know, it's the heavy lifting. It's the gift that keeps on giving, so to speak. You know, I have to make sure I fill my own cup daily.
Yeah,
so I have something to give. Absolutely. So I have something to give others. Otherwise, we're depleted. And then what good are we then? You
know? Exactly. And that's a big shift for a lot of people who want to give is they don't take care of themselves.
Right.
Teachers, moms, first responders, United States vets, they're so busy helping, giving their life to everybody else,
right.
They're ended up depleted,
right.
Suicidal, mentally ill, exactly. All the things that happen because you got to serve from the saucer.
Exactly.
Let the glass overflow, just serve from the saucer on the bottom. The second question, which, you know, one of my favorite quotes as I end a lot of shows is be more interested than interesting.
Right.
So I'm always asking, you know, what did you learn? So a kid comes home, did you do your best? What did you learn?
Right.
Right now you're asking them, what are we going to do together to improve from, because that's how we learn, that's how we live. Lessons keep on coming until we learn them. I don't think enough people are asking, what did you learn?
Right.
And they're putting the focus in on the outcome for some win or loss. I've never asked my kid, did you win?
Right, right.
But I, every time, the other day he shot 2 over in golf, way better than I am.
Mm, okay.
And he was expecting, I could see it in his face, so did you win? Because I can see it in his face, and all I said is, what did you learn?
What was his response?
Right?
Yeah.
He said, well, I actually learned. He said, I double bogeyed, and birdied, and parred the rest. And I learned there was a difference in my mindset when I hit the bad shot on the double bogey.
Mm,
right?
Impressive, yeah.
Yeah, he said, if I wish I would have said to my, because I was playing so well.
Right.
Right? He was 1 under at the time. And then he double bogeyed, but the minute he had his first bad shot, instead of saying, oh, this is when I'm gonna go get him,
right.
It was, oh,
yeah.
I blew the,
right.
And he said, I wish I didn't say that.
Right, that manifestation,
yeah.
Yep.
And so I love that lesson that he learned. Then the last question for kids, you do your best, learn lessons. This is the one that I think we lose, and I haven't lost it with my own motto, right? My motto is, make a lot of money, which allows you to surf from the saucer,
right.
To help a lot of people, and have a lot of fun.
Absolutely.
So every kid I meet, my question always is, man, did you have fun? No, I just told you we lost 32-0. I understand.
Yeah, right.
I understand. That's outcome-based.
Right, right.
But did you have fun?
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. You know, if you're learning something, but can you have fun losing 32-0 is a big part of the problem today.
Right. Right.
You know, can we help kids have that perspective of behaviors, of detaching from outcomes, of detaching from this? This is what I think.
Right.
Or other people think instead of I am. And I just enjoyed the pursuit of my potential, even though the outcome sucked.
Right. I think it's focusing on the journey. You know, I think that's a great way to look at it. If you focus on your journey and the process that it takes to get to that end goal, whatever the result is, I think it's something that you'll be able to live with. If you're rushing the journey and you're just looking at the end goal, you're going to miss the fine details in the middle, which is where the adversity hits. And that's where the true character is built.
I'll tell you this, Shay, and I know this will be your future and everything you're doing now in your life is your calling.
Absolutely.
I mentioned earlier, God doesn't give invitations without knowing your limitations. But one of the advantages of getting old, and I can see it in your eyes, and I get it here at the stadium, is all these kids you pour into, and 20 years down the road when you're my age, and you get some kid, he's president of a team, of CEO of a company, head of a foundation, right? Man, there's no greater reward for what you're doing. It shocks me every day. We were at Expo West yesterday and I felt so blessed. I told my wife, I'm walking and some guy just stops and said, hey man, I read your book 5 years ago and you changed my life. And it's constant.
Right.
But when you're in it, people, you got to believe it.
Absolutely.
And
Absolutely.
You're calling, God knows your limitations already. So keep following that invitation to serve other people, especially our kids, because you went through all that stuff so they don't have to.
100%.
And I think a lot of leaders like you have to be reminded and also congratulated. So I wanted to remind you, acknowledge you, and congratulate you for everything you do. God bless you.
Likewise.
The incredible Shay Cotton here on the Playbook.